I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi, and together with my partner Mary Izette, we are your hosts on this weekly journey into all things fermented here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, archived also on iTunes and Stitcher. Before we get into things today, we're going to make a couple quick announcements. We are very, very close to Homebrew Alley 9, which is happening at Alewife. We have most of the judges and stewards we need. It is too late to register, but I think that up until Thursday, you can register to judge and steward if you are BJCP certified for judging. And if you would like to steward and help out and find out how competitions are run, go to homebrewalley.com and you will get the information you need. But if you just want to come and hang out and support the homebrewers in the local community and see who won, come to the party at Alewife in Queens. It's off the 7. It's on 51st Street and Vernon, or just by Vernon in Long Island City, Queens. We're going to have a great big bash around 6 o'clock going well into the wee small hours of the morning. And our award ceremony will be around 7 o'clock. So if you've got people in it, come support them. And if you just want to support Homebrew and our sponsors, please come. Also, what else is coming on? The day after that, on Sunday, the 8th, Tara Witsit from episode 78 of Right Here on Ferment About It. she is the lady who runs around the country. Actually, she doesn't run. She drives a bus. She's got a bus, fermentation on wheels, she calls it. She's going to be teaching a class, a Get Cultured class at Bitter and Esters. So Tara is an amazing woman, and she ferments all sorts of things on her bus, a roaming thing, teaching people, spreading the gospel of fermentation around the country, around the U.S., on her bus. And she's coming back to New York City this Sunday, February 9th, and we'll be at Bitter and Esters at 4 p.m. Tickets are $35 and are available on bitteresters.com, that website. Get Cultured, an open forum on starter cultures and fermentation. And so you can get a bunch of cultures, go home and start getting get cranking. But today, what's today? Oh, wait, no, one more thing. Before we move on, I can't move on without being really freaking excited about this year's New York City Beer Week. There's all sorts of events going on right now. If you go to nycbg.com, the events are starting to pop up on there. Among them this year are the Rupert's Cup. Rupert was he used to have a brewery and was a great publican and a great brewer and just one of the city's favorite brewers over the years. Closed his brewery, I believe, in 64. Hasn't been around for a while, but that cup is basically an award we're going to award to whatever brewery has raised the most money for City Harvest. And how did they raise money? They will be entered into the Rupert's Cup, and fans will be able to vote through Eventbrite, and all the money and proceeds go to City Harvest. Speaking of City Harvest, following week, or actually that same week, we have Brunity happening at the Bell House. 50-plus homebrews, 10-plus, upwards of 10 homebrew clubs. It's basically a New York City homebrew day, and that'll be at the Bell House. Go to Brunity.com, B-R-E-W-N-I-T-Y.com. But today's about one of New York City's newest breweries, just launched 2 weeks ago. Some old friends of ours on the New York City brewing scene, Eric Feldman and Marshall Thompson. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. had the pleasure of tasting your beer for the first time out in market last week on what I call extended market research. It was very, very, very fun night that Mary and I had just before the storm kind of commenced, and it's freaking delicious.
Thank you.
What is the first beer you've launched with?
Our first beer is a white IPA, and we discovered this style about 2 years ago when we were traveling around west in Denver, and I also saw it in San Francisco, and we hadn't seen anything like it on the East Coast, and just fell in love with the idea that you can take that kind of balance of flavors and have a really like Belgian wheat base and get a little bit of spice underneath it, but still have a whole lot of American hops kind of kicking through. And that's what we fell in love with about the style. It's still an emerging kind of not BJCP sanctioned. It's just whatever people want to do with it still. So some folks go a little more Belgian yeast flavor. Some folks go different kind of style hops. But there's a lot out there to play with, and that's what we got excited about.
Now, I'm starting a little bit backwards, but the reason why is because I read somewhere that one of your first recipes that you guys kind of synced up on and that you really liked was a Belgian wit.
It was early on. Yeah.
So let's talk about those early days. Well, who are you? Where do you come from? And how did you guys meet? Where did this brewing thing start for the two of you as a team?
Sure. Eric and I actually met in my dorm room when we were sophomores in college, and a long time ago. Let's just say that. Yeah. It was a long time ago. It was 14 years ago. And then we met through a mutual friend. He went to school upstate New York. I was in D.C., and then Eric moved to D.C. a couple years later. We both lived in D.C. for a long time. And then we both moved to New York a little over 6.5 years ago, kind of independently. We're just done with D.C. at the time, starting new up here. And then we were both doing different things. In the fall of 2009, I was in grad school, and Eric was working as a lawyer full time. And we just had a conversation online. We were just looking to do a hobby of some kind. And I just sent him a link on GChat and with a homebrew kit for this brown ale. And I said, would you be interested in maybe just giving this a shot? Have like take a day and see how it goes. Because we both really like drinking beer. It was like, let's try it ourselves. Let's try to make it. And
well, I actually had the same link up in the tab next to where we were talking. Just on my own.
No way.
Yeah, I took a screenshot just in case anyone doubts it. And I said, well, this is clearly meant to be. So I think we ordered it up that night, bought, you know, the starter pack, $150 of basic equipment, and got the extract kit shipped out to us. And 2 weeks later, I took a Friday off of work. We made it a holiday for ourselves.
Brewmageddon, we called it.
Brewmageddon. Yeah. That was here in New York that you had it shipped.
In my Stuytown kitchen.
That's
which is
about.
Tiny,
yeah.
If anyone's ever
10
been
square
in
square feet, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been part of the challenge of starting this whole thing is how do you brew in New York City versus, you know, everybody has outside of this city, people have like garages or basements, a lot of space, which has been a real limitation for us. It's been frustrating sometimes.
Not to scare anybody off because you can do it and you have done it successfully in the small.
Yeah, space. Exactly.
What were some of the challenges on that first brew? What style of brewing was it? Was it extract? Was it a partial mash?
It was actually a partial match kit. I think we went straight to intermediate because we're like beginner.
Yeah, right.
Partial match. It's great. It's really straightforward. You follow the directions shot for shot, and they just tell you put you know these grains that we give you in this bag, tie it up, brew it at you know steep it at a certain temperature, depending on the style, and then you just pour in the extract. It's incredibly straightforward, and it's hard. I mean, I would say it's hard to mess it up, but there's a million ways to get it slightly wrong. Yeah. But at the end of the day, when you come out with something that even vaguely resembles beer, and you did enough of a job that you can open one of the bottles, drink it, and go, oh, man, that's actually beer. I made that. That feeling alone is enough to think, whatever I did wrong the first time, I'll do it again. I'll fix it. But it hooked us right away.
Yeah.
I think one of the coolest things about doing home brewing is that there's the delayed gratification for it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh man.
So it's not totally, like baking or something where, or even just like making any kind of like cooking like eggs or something where you're like, oh, I screwed it up 10 minutes after you made it. You're like, nope, you have to wait a couple of weeks before you really find out how it worked out.
And that that anxiety and just hoping you did the right thing, because, you know, like I've said on this before, you know, well, we all know that, you know, brewers make wort, yeast makes beer, but, and there are guests of honors. We make them the food and then let them sit in their nice little room. And you don't want to be that waiter who comes to the table and keeps asking and ruins their experience. You know, you want to, you know, let them have their hang and have their experience, and they'll thank you with this beautiful, beautiful liquid.
Yeah, we were really happy with how the first one came out. We originally did a nut brown ale as our first batch. It was kind of in honor of what Eric and I used to drink in D.C. We always sat at this one corner of a bar called the Black Cat in D.C.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we would just drink Newcastle all night long. That was like our beer for some reason. It was really before we, I don't even know if they had craft beer. This was...
Is Black Cat around DuPont Circle?
It's pretty close to it. It's on 14th Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We both lived like within two or three blocks of there. It was very close. And that was our go-to beer. And it's funny, even now thinking about it, I'm like, wow, were we drinking that much Newcastle at the time? They didn't really have craft beer. This was in like 2006 or so.
2006, 2007, yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to where you did that, that was in your apartment, Eric?
The brewing?
Yeah, the
yes.
brewing. And
yes.
did you have a girlfriend or were you living with anybody at the time?
No, I had a girlfriend at that time. She is not
until you
currently
started brewing.
My girlfriend.
That one of the challenges that you saw?
Well, I'll say this. To get the temperature where it needed to be, one of the advantages of Stuytown, on my lease, you know, it was a bunch of years ago that I signed it. I don't know if they still do this, but I didn't pay separate utilities. That was included in my rent. So I wasn't thinking about the air conditioner, what I need to do. So I turned my bedroom... My like 8x10 bedroom, that was a fermentarium where nice. That was a giant fermenter. I slept in it. It was freezing cold. I just ran my air conditioner to keep it at 66 to 68 degrees in my bedroom, mm-hmm. which sounds awesome in the summer, but it's not. Like by September, it starts to get kind of, you know, it's moist in there. It smells like bread, and you're just living in it. And eventually you go, oh yeah, this is why she doesn't want to sleep over all the time. I currently... my girlfriend right now, who I do live with, is incredibly understanding. Mm-hmm. She lets me have a whole closet full of my gear. She gets two closets full of her stuff too, so it works out great. And we have I'm no longer... She actually made this a specific point, that my bedroom wasn't allowed to be a giant fermenter anymore.
No more fermenter.
So it's your collective bedroom now, not just yours anymore.
That's
it's
right.
It's shared.
Yes.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And she wouldn't deal with it being freezing. So I got a little fridge, mm-hmm. just a mini fridge that I can have a temperature controller on. And figuring that out was really cool to actually see it work and how the motor kicks on and off. And that's one of those learning processes where you think, oh, yeah, just plug it in and push a number. It's like, no, you have to understand how these circuits turn on and off, because mm-hmm. that's what's going to kick you to the right temperature. But right now it's in the corner. When I first got it, I put it kind of in the center of the room. So it became a talking piece, mm-hmm. which was not my intention. But every time anyone walked in, it's like, you know, welcome to our beautiful home. And here's... a fermenter. This is my boyfriend's fridge, and now it's hiding in the corner. It's under a very nice kind of draped tapestry looking thing. You barely notice it's
very
there.
Tasteful now.
Very tasteful. Yeah.
Very tasteful.
But that's one of those adjustments you make. I don't have a garage or a basement to put this stuff in. And same thing. We just this equipment adds up. It stacks up in size too. Yeah.
When did it turn to? Okay, we got to start doing this professionally. Where did that change go? And that is a very long road. We'll talk more about that road after break, but we'll talk about
okay.
When.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny. The very beginning, we had the first couple batches, and we're like, oh, we're really good at this. Let's start a brewery right now. Which is ridiculous, like thinking back on it now. But we just kept doing it for a couple of years. We were both doing our own things professionally. And then it was about 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago now, that... I just came to Eric one day and I said, I can't keep doing this anymore.
With lightning in his eyes.
So I just said, I can't do anything else other than think about opening a brewery mm-hmm. all the time. This is all mm-hmm. I want to do. I don't care what we have to do between now and then, but this is my only goal. Like, do this with me, please.
Yeah.
And it took a week or two of convincing, and then
it's not a bad dose.
Yeah, it wasn't too hard because he was on board too.
Hey Eric, I want to open a brewery too, man.
I signed a document that says I have to just
exclusively. Fair enough.
All right. So yeah, it was about 2 years ago, and at the time, you know, we knew we wanted to do it in Bushwick. I'd moved to Bushwick. Now it'll be 3 years ago, And what did we start with? We started with a name and a logo. Actually, we didn't even have a logo yet. We had a name. It's called Braven. It's based on a buck and a raven.
A buck and a raven. Crossbreeding.
Yes. It's a chimera, if you will.
Okay.
And then so we worked on our business plan, on our logo, on our styles. We ended up coming up, well, we wanted to do like a black and white scheme, so that's kind of how we actually end up with our first two beers, was a white IPA and what's turned out to be a black pale ale. So those are our initial two flagship beers, a black and a white. And so then we did a Kickstarter to kind of help us get going, and I definitely recommend anyone who's interested in doing this to check out Kickstarter, Indiegogo, any crowdfunding platform that worked really well for us. From there, we kept working on our business plan, and at this point, we probably had 17 different business plans of how we were going to make this happen. And and that kind of led us to looking into getting our own place, but then we were talking with the distributor, and then we decided we're going to brew upstate, and then all these pieces kind of eventually came together, and we're able to finally brew our beer.
It's like juggling while putting together a puzzle, and you're throwing the pieces in the air, and you're just hoping you grab the right one, and whatever you're holding,
throw it down.
Yeah, whatever you're holding, that's what you're holding right now, and you're going to work with it. But if another opportunity comes, or that won't work anymore, you have to be ready to throw it back up in the air, grab that next piece, and start working with it. And then hopefully, once a couple of them come together, you get the picture really starts to form.
I believe it was Brooklyn Magazine interview with the guys. You know, one thing you learned from this whole process was just be ready for anything, be malleable, and roll with the tides.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you start out with a plan A, and then you think, all right, well, if plan A doesn't happen, then let's have a plan B just in case. And then suddenly you're on plan B, and you're like, all right, well, we need a plan C then. And then suddenly you're on plan C, and then you go back to plan A, and it just keeps going over and over until something sticks. Like you say, and you get the right pieces together, and usually never the ones that you started out with, what you thought were going to happen. But if you're able to adapt and not be so steadfast in exactly how everything is supposed to work, then you can kind of keep rolling with the punches.
Right on. We're going to take a really quick break, come back with Braven Brewing Company.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to episode 106 of Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Here in the studio with Eric Feldman and Marshall Thompson of Braven Brewing Company. Braven is a cross between a buck and a raven, and the logo is dope. It's in black and white, just like their first two beers.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the whole story.
And that's the whole story. Thanks for listening to Foment About It. We'll see you next week. So we're just at the part where we talked a little bit about you having hurdles and being malleable or adaptable, not malleable, because you're not a pushover. He's the pushover for saying yes after a week. But
this is great. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for inviting us on.
Yeah.
Insulting me to my face.
He's malleable like iron, though.
There you go.
Thank you much.
You're welcome.
But there are a lot of hurdles in starting a brewery, and some of the ideas. So right now, tell us what the brewery, how it is functioning right now, and how you got there as this, and what the plans are for the future.
Well, the plan has always been to open our own space in Bushwick and have that tap room where people can come in, hang out with us, try all sorts of different beer.
Yeah.
And that was one of those ideas that we also brought back from visiting out west and doing the market research you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Just seeing the kind of environment that they had for breweries and for beer and how much of a piece of daily life it was. So we were hoping to bring that back with us. Right now, to get started, we're brewing with a brewery in upstate New York, which is awesome that we're still in New York. Mm-hmm. But we'd love to bring all that operation back down here. But they've been great at helping us take our small recipe, and we got it scaled up to a big size, and we're able to
how
actually distribute.
How small were you brewing as home brewers, and how big did it scale up to?
It was 5 gallons, your standard 5 gallon mm-hmm. kind of pots. That's all that fit on my stove. 10 gallons won't boil on my on terrible stove.
Not strong enough.
Yeah,
not strong
enough. Get a bucket heater, baby.
Oh, man. And we decided to, you know, dip our toe in the pool and just scale up to 200 barrels at
200.
A time.
200 barrels.
As you do. That's what everybody does,
of course,
right?
Of course.
To be fair, it's 2 120-barrel batches, and that's just the yield on it is about 210.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that, you, how many times had you brewed this white IPA before sending it there, and how did you deal with the scaling of the recipe?
It was at least a dozen or 15 just on the
yeah, if not scale. More than that. We didn't really keep track, but it was over and over and over. And this is what Eric was we were talking about earlier, how it's a little frustrating sometimes for homebrewers to do the same thing over and over. It's part of homebrewing is be able being creative and being able to
playful.
Do different things and
absolutely.
Yeah, and just trying a different thing every time, see how it turns out. With us, it was pretty hard because we like being creative and trying different things, but we really wanted to nail down this recipe in particular. The white was a little harder to get perfect than the black. We got the black pretty quickly. Not like it was easy, but it only took us maybe 4 or 5 batches before we were really happy with what we ended up with that. The white with the wheat and the different hops that we were using, it took a number of batches before we were really happy with the end product of it. Scaling up was difficult.
And also with scaling up, I know that hops are, you can't just pick any hop unless you have planned or if you've gotten a hop contract. So 5 gallons is easy. We can get a lot of stuff on spec or a spot at homebrew stores. But, you know, when you knew where you were going to brew, did you eventually have to start thinking about that, or were your hops readily available?
Well, they weren't readily available that we knew about. And we were working on substitute recipes
mm-hmm.
and tried, because we were so happy with where the hops were at like batch 10, but we knew that we weren't going to be able to necessarily get them at the big scale. So now we're on batch 11 through 15. We're just messing around. What about these combinations? What about something a little bit more readily available on spot? How can we make this work? And at the end of all this, the brewery that we're working with, we were able to actually secure most of the hops that we wanted.
That's awesome.
From the first part. So they definitely helped make that happen, which was a big deal. And I think some of the alternate recipes were still fantastic. It just wasn't the first version of it we fell in love with. So you have to be ready to kind of, that's one of those other adjustments. If we went to market with one of the alternates, it still would have been a great beer. It just wouldn't have been that first one that we went, oh man, this is it.
Right. When do you think you'll be brewing the black?
Actually, we're going to be doing the black most likely after we're doing another one we haven't talked about yet. The next one we're going to be doing is a Pilsner.
Oh, yes.
This
is fantastic.
Yeah. So
go in there next.
Okay.
For historical reasons, which maybe you're going
to
bring up.
Beat you to the point.
All right.
Yeah. As you're about to ask, Bushwick used to be a great brewing center for the Northeast, really.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be over 2 dozen breweries in the neighborhood. Most people don't even know that, especially when they move here. The last one closed in 1976. It was Schaefer. They were the last ones to close their doors. And so we wanted to be the first one in the neighborhood on almost 40 years now. It was all German immigrants from the late 1800s to the early 1900s. Most of them closed up all of them closed up during Prohibition. Only a few of them were able to open again after. And the style that everyone did was Pilsners. Everyone had their own version of a Pilsner. And we were lucky to find an article online that was from 1995 or 1997, something like that, that actually spelled out what exactly goes into a Bushwick Pilsner from the different style, the different breweries that were here. Rheingold, Peels, Trommers, a bunch of other ones. Oh, you have it pulled up right there.
Is it from from morebeer.com.
It is from More Beer.
And it was published in January, 1994, or republished from February 1994 by Ben Jankowski, who is actually a really great home brewer out in Long Island. And he will be there at Homebrew Alley. You'll get to judge with him.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah,
we have to thank this guy.
He's straight up Long Island, very, very New York, definitely knows his history here in New York. And it is an awesome article about all the things going on in Bushwick, or that happened in Bushwick.
Yeah,
and
it's actually really
revival
hard.
Is long due. Long
hard overdue. To find other information about it. It's like this history is almost forgotten. There is one other book that I've seen referenced a number of times. It's called Brewed in Brooklyn, or The Breweries of Brooklyn, that was published in the 70s, I think. And to try to find a copy of it now is almost impossible. The ones I've seen online are like going for a couple $100 each. So there really isn't much information at all. There aren't very many photos. I one time found a list of about the 30 different breweries that were in the neighborhood, but you can't find much information about any of them. They're not like public records. I haven't gone to New York Public Library yet to see if there's like some microfiche somewhere about them, but I'm sure it's out there. It's hard to find online. So that's why it is actually difficult for people to even understand that there were so many breweries here. And you know, they're not still standing. They're not like these old buildings that are still hanging around that say like Rheingold Brewery on it anymore. They're just not around. There's one that I can think of, the former Hittleman Brewery that now the Well occupies, the Wick and the Well.
Yep.
That's the only one I can really think of in the whole area. So we like bringing back this tradition and educating people on what was here before, and there was something to be really proud of.
And it's good. One of the things I liked about this is it talked about how New York, we generally like our beers a little bit hoppier, or did at least at the time they were making these pilsners. So, and they talked about using adjuncts and how basically that kind of creates an easier link to letting those hops be showcased and exhibited. How are you forming your pilsner?
There's one in my fridge right now at home.
Oh yeah,
and it's definitely an adjustment from ale to lager brewing. And it's not just in the lagering schedule, just the beer kind of the wort forms differently, and the working with corn is very different than working with wheat and anything else. So it's a big adjustment the first time you kind of mash in and it doesn't hit the target that you think it's going to hit. And that's that moment that always seems to be that moment when someone calls me too. I'm like, oh, this is the 20 minutes when I really need no one to ask me any questions.
Yeah.
Because I have, you know, I have the hot water on the side and cold water on the other side, just in case you need to adjust the temperature.
Sure.
So that's always a panic moment, but it's great when you actually get it to balance out where you want it to be.
I think this is a really, neat time to talk about this right now in light of last night's little Super Bowl commercial. Yeah. And talking about,
I did just finally see that this right before I came here.
Yeah, so one of the big macros is very proud of being macro. Yet this macro brewery keeps buying up, some craft beer, and it deliberately kind of brought the issue up, and it's very controversial right now.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. I know what they're going for Budweiser, Budweiser's main intention is.
Yeah,
but I know why they're buying up the craft breweries,
yeah,
but I don't understand why Anheuser-Busch would take that stance and let Budweiser essentially trash on craft beer.
Right.
That's counterintuitive to me.
And I guess I'm kind of tying this all in a little bit because pilsners, a lot of people would, in homebrew circles, the word adjunct is sometimes a bad word.
Yeah.
And if you use an adjunct, it, like anything, it's just an ingredient in a recipe to get to a flavor that you want to get to. And I think it's totally fine and fun as long as it's for that purpose. Right. And
so, right.
But I mean,
yeah, for us, it's not about cutting costs so that we can brew millions of barrels a year. It's to get the right taste and to be authentic for what the tradition was at the time.
Absolutely.
And with whatever you're brewing with, if you get a great product that people like and respect, you still get the goal that you're going for.
That's right. You mean the golden suds that are so... That's what they say. They love the golden suds. Anyway. Of course, only microbrewery can have golden suds.
Nobody else can have that.
That's the other thing. Like, plenty of microbrewers are still making amazing standard American pilsners and lagers.
Absolutely.
You know, when we were down at Arrogant Swine down the street, that's a great barbecue place on Morgan Ave, they had the Evil Twin Low Life I believe that was a Pilsner
yeah.
on tap. And yeah, it tastes pretty much like High Life or like, you know, a giant macro brewery. But yeah, I think it might be tasted a little bit better, but it's that same kind of style where, you know, if this weren't, you know, quote unquote, a craft beer, like, would you know that it's made by Evil Twin, this like really revered craft brewery? Maybe not, but it's what I wanted to drink while I was eating this barbecue, and it worked perfectly with it.
Well, I found it, just to jump back in, I found it very interesting that they, Budweiser, used the term macro beer.
Yeah.
And to self-identify that way, that now these lines are drawn, well, it almost makes it a little more clear kind of what camp you want to be a part of. Or
the lines were already drawn a while ago. But I mean, not, the small guys attacked the big guys right. in public services. And this is the first time, I guess, well, not the first time, but a significant time when during Super Bowl, you know, that they're kind of fighting back in by name, calling out
If you
name.
Think of this stage, though, there's, you know, 100 million some odd people are watching the Super Bowl. And the craft brewer circle, who might be more familiar with these terms, is much smaller than that.
Absolutely.
This is bringing it into a very public venue in a way that, you know, and some of my ex-roommates who like beer, who come out and drink a lot of cool craft beer, but don't necessarily understand the history behind why things are the way they are, they're faced with it a little bit more now. So that conversation is all of a sudden coming to light in a way that we all can say, okay, now we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think raising the conversation is always good. I mean, people were talking about it, sort of. I mean, in just a different
we were. Bias.
We were. Yeah. That's right. We were always, it's always our table trying to make that market. What? So when you guys come to Brooklyn or to Bushwick, do you have a set idea of how you want things to be? Are you going to be a brewery first with a tap room? Or are you going to try and do a brewery restaurant and then also still brew big the way you kind of starting out? So like this, you know?
Yeah, like we were saying, they're one of many different
right.
business plans you can follow at this point. We at this point are looking to do probably about a 5-barrel system here, mm-hmm. Where we'll be able to be pretty creative doing small batches. Probably have a tap room with anywhere between 6 and 8 different styles on at any time.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Um,